Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. And I think there's nothing more evolutionary than the creative impulse, the movement within human beings to express themselves. And who I have with me tonight is one of my favorite expressive artists, someone who's really devoted his whole life to that pursuit. And we're going to get to, like, understand what that's all about. Mark Maislin, how are you?
Hi, Alan. I'm doing quite well. Thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it. It's fantastic.
Is this the first time you've been on my show? Because, of course, I've known you for, what, 30, 40 years. So.
Yeah, I know. I've been on the cable show, but never on the radio with you.
Well, good. Let's try to duplicate, if we can, those conversations we have for hours where we're just talking about creativity and what it is and, you know, what inspires people. So why don't you give us a little background or tell us, like, what feeds your creative ideas? Like, you know, you're an expressive guy, so, yeah, what inspires you?
Well, you know, this has a number of different faces, because when you talk about creativity, one may look at seeing someone is building a house and they're building a beautiful house, and you say, wow, you know, that's so creative that you built this house. And in fact, the effort is indeed a creative effort. They're putting work into something. When you get to the, to the other side of it, you go, well, hold it a second. What are we talking about when we say creativity? And that's where I think it gets a little bit more nebulous and obviously can't be defined as well as, you know, building a house or writing a play. For myself, as, you know, a former dancer, an American mime, and a theater attrition, and a writer and director, there's always this impetus towards the manifestation of something. But we're talking about, and what we've had many discussions about, is what's behind that? What's the core of that? And that's where it's much more difficult. It's much more ephemeral. You know, how does someone who has, you know, no education and I'll just put it in those terms, you know, education or no training, come up with something that is phenomenally unique and can even benefit humanity? Wow, where did that come from? The person wasn't trained in that way. Where did that come from? That's the big question.
Right. Well, where does it come from? Yeah. I mean, where does any of it come from? Those that have been trained, there's something, that same mystery that comes to them also.
That is correct. And training does not necessarily guarantee creativity. Hard work and applying yourself to a particular role, developing a character, for example, has, you know, clearly, you know, creative aspect to it. But there are people that say, hey, I just want to be directed. You know, just tell me what to do. And they're amazingly great because they're able to take that information in and then put out something that's a totally believable character. They're able to transcend a particular persona that is in a social life and, you know, and make something that's so real that an audience can empathize and grow with that. But we're talking about something a little bit different. And because it doesn't necessarily revolve around the thing of training, and I think that what you're kind of asking me, and something that I examine all the time, and has gotten me to the place where I am now, is there's something that is in the universe or in the unfathomable all that is. There's a greater consciousness, and it's not a person, whether male or female. It's not a god, per se, but there is a fabric of allness, of consciousness, of unlimitedness. And that unlimitedness is a really, really big part here. Because in my own process, I attempt, and even when I'm teaching, I attempt to myself and in others to, on many levels, on a physical, an emotional, a mental, and a spiritual way, take this vessel that we call the person, the body, and enable a flow, a cleansing of it in a way. And this is not a meditative thing. It's not chanting something. And cleanse it in a way so that this incredible, unlimited flow is allowed to pass through me. And in that process of passing through me, because I'm not making judgments, I'm not stopping it, I'm allowing just a free expression, so to speak, because something is coming through me, that element is where the creativity lies. It's in that process that then enables something. And the great thing is we don't quite know exactly what that something is. It could be a role that you have. Excuse me?
But I was just going to say, this thing, the Tao, or this creative force, passes through you in a particular way that is particular to you. You know, that's the thing. It's like, maybe it's like electricity. You plug it in the wall, but if you have a lamp there, it lights up the lamp, and if you have another object, but that the flow is the same. It's the objects that, or the vehicles that are different, that is the conductor of that energetics, right?
I totally agree. That particular electricity is able to be conducted through anybody, and so it's universally accepted there, and it's unlimited in that aspect. But like you indicate, and why are some artists, you know, greater than other artists, is because the way in which they have now processed that and then set it back out in terms of an expression makes it art. It makes it creative. It makes it felt by somebody else. In that sense of felt by somebody else, meaning it's touching something that in fact does exist in somebody else. And so therefore, it has that harmonic resonance, and therefore you get an empathy or an ability to believe, or you're moved. I'm going to give you a little bit of a different example, though. When you say this is coming through you, people, I've heard, you know, and all of us have indeed heard, this Jackson Pollock, and all he ever does is he stands over with a brush and, you know, he just threw a bunch of paint on a canvas. And then they call it art. Hold it a second. Go and look at all kinds of paintings that paints have been splattered onto the canvas. And I certainly have gone to enough museums and I've seen what would be considered works of art. I've sat in front of Jackson Pollock paintings for hours. There is something in what the electricity, as you indicated, that went through him, and the way in which he purely expressed it. It didn't have these other aspects that tamped it down, that limited the expression, that was translated. It's not translated. It became a pure expression. And let's say he was the very first one that did that particular thing. One would say, not only is he a creative man, but he created this form. That is having both sides of this particular process, obviously.
But the other thing about Pollock, though, is his art was special for its time. I mean, if he would have done that maybe 30, 40 years ago, nobody would have understood it. I mean, I get
right.
Pollock, Jackson Pollock's art, because it's within the context of a greater culture, and what we see in those swirling lines is this chaos that started to take hold of urban life. So what we see really is an extension of our mind projected out there. Do you know what I mean?
I most assuredly do. Absolutely. This, you know, especially when we talk about art, that it does have this particular cultural relevance. It does have
that
reflection. And by the nature of art itself, it does reflect what the time is. Yet, as I envision the artists, is they're standing on the edge of the world and they're shining a light out and they're illuminating the path for all to follow. So at the same time, they're connected to the culture, that they are also leading the culture. And that is...
One more aspect to that is, really great artists, I think, don't really know what they've done. They're in a different state. They're beyond the ego mind. So they're, in a way, they're like channels or vehicles for a greater vision that's beyond their personality. Would you agree with that?
I would 100% agree with that. And if we go back to the beginning of what we were just talking about, in cleansing the system of getting the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual state of being clear enough so that one does become a channel for this otherness, for this oneness, for this consciousness, whatever name you want to tag to it, you know, it is appropriate. And indeed, there are many of us who, and from a personal example of, you know, I did a piece and someone came up to me afterwards, and this has happened to many people, and they say, oh, that was about this. Oh, that was about people in the city when they're too cramped together. And I just nod, because that was their interpretation of that particular thing. If you push me right to the wall and said, well, what did you, like you said a second ago, what did you mean by that? What was your, I would have to own up to, I had intention, but it wasn't necessarily formed. And it only became formed as the desire to express this feeling, this piece of the imagination that got tweaked because I was clear enough to get this input, and it manifested, and I'm writing this down, and I'm working with three people, and I said, now move this way, go into that shape. Okay, now cross the stage that way and stop and look up, and let's get that light going there. Someone says, oh, well, that's about the discovery of humanity. Well, I guess that's okay too. But in fact, what it was this overwhelming feeling for me and other artists that don't really quite know exactly what it was that they were doing, and that's totally acceptable, by the way, of this overwhelming light and coming together with all the parts of myself and seeing it. So that's how it manifested in this movement and that correlation of sound between people and light, and suddenly becomes a piece that resonates and everybody is moved by it, albeit possibly in different ways, but that becomes a creative product. Other works, you know, there were lesser works than, you know, people, you know, Pollock or myself or whatever, you know, right? Oh, you get something done and tear it up.
Well, I'm going to read you a few. I just want to read you a few quotes. One is by a guy named Raymond Williams. Have you heard of him? He wrote a book called The Long Revolution.
And I think I've heard of that, but I don't know what it is. Oh, go ahead.
The Long Revolution is how the artist is the one that makes changes within the culture. It doesn't come from war. So anyway, Williams says, the scientist is a rational explorer, but the artist is an emotional explorer, right?
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
there's another quote I want to throw out here to you. Marshall McLuhan, who was really a visionary of the digital age of communication, says, I think of art at its most significant as a distant early warning system that can always be relied upon to tell the old culture what is beginning to happen to it.
Beautiful. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So one more thing I want to tell you, and then I'd love to hear what you have to say. I was at this YouTube station tonight, and there were probably about 100 people sitting around listening to rap music, listening to this guy's latest new rap music, and... what was that guy's name? I mean, I never heard of him, but he obviously, this guy named Vic Mensa, have you heard of him?
I don't think so.
Anyway, there were about 100 people, multicultural, in their 20s and 30s, listening to this music on their headphones, but and I picked up one. I could not relate to it at all. But everyone was like really having a great time and really loving it and nodding their heads. It's like I felt like I was on another planet. I mean, it's like I did not get it. I did not get the aesthetics. I did not get the culture. I don't know what's happening to us, or you know, and that might be considered great art, and maybe it is by some people, and I'm sure it is. But I don't know. Maybe you would have loved it. But what's happening? I mean, something's evolving. I thought I was sort of on the cutting edge, and then I come along, and this thing that I totally can't connect with is like everybody's into it. It's like, has that happened to you?
Well, in many different ways, of course, this happens to me, because I don't feel that we're really capable of understanding, integrating, and being able to understand and freely express everything that's going on. There's so much that's going on. In a way, if we separate stuff that's earthly and stuff that's a little bit more out there in terms of the universe, you get a little bit more distinction. But in something like this, you know, think of it. You had rock and roll that was really happening, and then it's now in the past. Yeah, there's some rock and roll, but it moved into another way of expression, because people always are trying to find, again, this is part of the creative process, what is going on? And so you had, you know, rap coming up, which was definitely different, and then it moved in, thank goodness, it progressed into hip-hop, because that brought in the total culture and the forms, whether it was, you know, R&B and funk, and, you know, integrating these things where now you're having a sound that is going to progress for the next, whatever, you know, 10, 20 years, whatever, that somebody's rock and rolled it, because it has become the standard. And one other line, I might say to you, was it rap or was it some form of hip-hop? You know, or spoken word that was integrated with some music, because there are these distinctions. But the major thing of what you're saying, and then I want to get back to the quote, is that something's going on out there. And what is out there? Out there is the consensual reality of the planet. Something is going on. And at this particular time in history, it's vibrating at a particular rate. And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know, well, it ain't vibrating, it's some ballad. Oh, no. It's vibrating in hip-hop. It is going really fast. You can't get enough information packed into a second. If these amazing hip-hop artists could sing even faster, they would. But they can't, and we can't hear it as fast. So they're limited by the amount, how fast their lips and tongues can go, because the information has gotten so dense, and there's so much of it, and so much has become available that it's reflected in the very existence of our world. And it's certainly reflected, as it always is, in music, which fundamentally is vibrationally based. So why do more people go to see symphonies than go to see plays? Because in a symphony, you can close your eyes and have them envelop you. In theater, it's a participatory involvement. You need to put your energy out there and kind of meet halfway with this artist that's on the stage called an actor. So it demands more of the individual, therefore, and also it's not vibrationally based that way. It's verbally, intellectually based. And so you have a different part of you stimulated, but you also have a different part of you that needs to become involved. Is one better than the other? No, one's not better than the other. They're both equally as powerful. But music, it really has that particular little quality. And I'm sure in these little space capsules or things that we're sending out to reach out to other forms of life, a bunch of it is sound-oriented. It's not just ones and zeros, because that is a standard of...
That Close Encounters scene where they're communicating through sound. I mean,
absolutely brilliant.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. That's what you're talking about, maybe.
That's most assuredly what I'm talking about. Absolutely. And then you get back to the guy with the. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. No, the quotes. Talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, aside from Marshall McLuhan, well, you know, Dr. Moser, you know, Williams' quote, where I can't quite remember exactly what you said, but...
The artist is the emotional explorer of reality. The scientist is the physical explorer. Yes.
Exactly. And I think that's, you know, simply stated and really well stated, because I know even for in my own being and my understanding of brain, and it's so amazing how neuroscience is developing at top speed now. I wish I could be living a lot longer, because there's so much that's going to be happening in that arena, that you have left brain, right brain. You have something that's linear and orderly, you know, wants to put things in a manageable fashion, and you have another part of the brain that is not interested in that at all. It's simply taking information and light and sound and simply allowing it to, you know, fleurble inside you and move you, and suddenly your heart is going faster, and it's not necessary to define that. It's more important to allow that openness to happen, like in kids up to, you know, basically the third grade, where they're free in that way. That left brain, right brain is not separated in that way. The rational part has not said, oh, I shouldn't be jumping up and down and yelling right now. It's not socially acceptable. Wrong. You were being so moved by the sun coming through that cloud. Of course you should be jumping up and down and yelling. That's a pure expression of what is. Not, oh, I wonder how many miles the sun is from here. And, gee, that's
right. No, I like what you're saying. A pure expression of what is.
Yes, that's the goal.
That is that's a beautiful way of expressing that. So art, then, is an attempt to... not even reproduce it, but to sensitize ourselves to it, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then art does what it's supposed to do, or any creative action, actually, but, you know, art especially, it has that property of enabling both the viewer and the creator to, in a way, step out of their own limitations, of the social limitations, the culture, whatever, and experience a more broad understanding, even if you can't put it into words. Oh, this is about this. You can make a theme, okay, but it's almost like saying, you know, what's love? How do you know what a thought is? How can you express in words what a kiss is? And there's tons of songs written about it, novels written about it, trying to describe, but it's indescribable because it's the other part of the brain. It's not the part of the brain that has the desire to describe. Although we want to use the other part of the brain in order to formulate something that will be a symphony, that, you know, that will be a piece of choreography, you know. Without that part of the brain, it's just a mess. That's why the little kid jumping up and down with the sun is such a pure... Why do people smile when they see two children doing something and they say, oh, they're so innocent? There's no other words, but you smile, your heart opens. Your level of compassion is profound. That's what we want to do as artists, is capture that. You know what I'm saying, Alan?
I know. So you've really, and I said this in the beginning, devoted your life to sensitizing yourself to feeling, and then through your direction as a director, as an actor, as a movement person, you've communicated that sensitivity to others. That was your compulsion to do that. Right.
Absolutely. Even as a younger person, you know, some greater quality. I didn't know what. Not necessarily about me being me great, but rather a certain greatness, a bigger thing going on. And I explored different things as a younger person in terms of, you know, religion, because that seemed to be the root. And then I moved past that only because there was too much dogma attached to that. But the principles of it, like the Christ principle, is bigger than Jesus, the person. I'm not going that direction. I'm going into the Christ principle. You know, the all in all. You know, what Rama Maharshi talks about, and Nisa Gopartha talks about, like, let go.
But the contradiction of that is that a lot of these spiritual teachings don't seem very artistic. They're matter of fact, but you know, they're not. You know, it's different. I mean, it seems like there's a polarity between the maybe not between the creative aspect of the human ego, in a sense, or the part that transcends the ego, and religious teaching, spiritual teaching. I mean, maybe they don't have to be, and I think people like Kandinsky tried to merge the two, and there happened. But for the most part, you know, artists and spiritual teachings, let's say, don't really meet. But maybe tell me what you think about that.
Yeah, I will agree with you. And that's why I said, I'm, you know, passing through that stage of understanding, and I feel, you know, in a big way, they don't really meet. And I kind of think that in the spiritual process, there's that letting go of the self-identification. There's, you know, there's letting go of expectation, and therefore you are more enabled to experience the consciousness and the all in all. When one is going towards the artistic side, there's a commitment towards the production of something. I want to be a painter. I want to be a musician. I can never put the guitar down, or I just can't, Mom, I just can't stop dancing. I just got to keep moving. There's something that's, you know, driving you to moving. And so you can find a niche of how the universe is expressing that way, but it does not have to do with a spiritual understanding. But in the bigger picture, it's the greatest spiritual understanding of all, because
I agree.
The beginning, and I'm going to tell you why. Because it's the greatest, because it, from the beginning of our conversation here, it's in the cleansing of all of those jams and doorways and limitations and judgments and expectations, in order to have that pure consciousness come through a pure vessel called Mark or Alan or whomever it may be, without having a religious connotation, without having that. Remember, I said there's a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual aspect. You know, there is a four-part thing there.
Well, I agree with you. I do agree that the true artistic creator is beyond, if we're going to make a judgment, beyond religious spiritual philosophy, because the philosophy, like the science, is trying to explain existence, and what the artist does is give us existence. You know, we're not explaining the mystery, we're delivering the mystery in another package that taps us into our own mystery. And I think that's something science and religion can't do. And so I think art is the highest form of communication on the level of spirit, in a sense, you know?
I do it in my life, you know, in this arena. I fundamentally, you know, agree with you. And also, you know, I'm also an intellectual person, so we can have this conversation because I've examined it, you know, read stuff, and it's not, like I said earlier, the person that is, you know, has no education and none of that, but produces astounding, you know, pieces of art.
I'll just tell you what Kandinsky said. He says, "Art is the mysterious expression of the mysterious."
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
But wait, what were you saying just then? I didn't hear the whole thing.
No, indeed, that is, you know, that is really, really true. When you get to we're coming back to this, you know, thought about, you know, your purity and consciousness and then having it form somehow, because the artist is committed to forming something that's going on. And is it, you know, is it art without an audience if you just produce it? Because we'll go back to creativity in a moment.
I think it is because you're doing it. The artist is first doing it for themselves. So, I mean, at least that's my experience of creating. It's like I'm doing, and if there's an audience that gets something from it, great. But the art, for me, actually, there's a great dialogue with Socrates, and there's these orators, and there's, I think it's a dialogue of Eon, and he says to this guy, you know what makes you a great orator? And he got, and this guy says, yeah, because I can say the words, and I bring through the feeling, and I give people meaning. And Socrates goes, no, that's not it. It's when you're out of the way, something else, like you've been saying, comes through you. The gods speak through you, he says, and that's what makes you great. You get out of the way, and we're still in that understanding. We're still there.
Absolutely.
And that does
seem to be a truth, actually. That really does seem to be a truth. Yeah. Depending on, you know, the culture and everything else. The thing that I was, you know, relating to in terms of an audience is that, because you had brought up the thing of this particular experience, that, yes, I am feeling something, let's say, and when I produce something and somebody else sees it and then they feel something, that is an amazing miracle. And you may say, well, people, you know, you're walking down the street and, you know, the wind comes and you feel something and that comes. And well, that's actually true. But, and that is true. But in my process, and I know in other people's processes who are examining these kinds of things, where when I'm walking down the street and suddenly a bird swooshes by, dips down and goes up, and at almost the same time, because it's spring, this smell of spring happens, something else happens inside of me and others. This is a normal thing. And that's the quality that one tries to, you know, to produce as an artist and sustain it over a play or a piece of choreography or a piece of music, whatever, because you are, again, going past the individual limitation of both self and an audience, and experiencing something that's different, and that's
right.
Not just different, but it's vital. It's expansive. You know, it makes you.
Yeah,
grow.
I think that's a really good point, and I'll interpret it this way, in a sense, to say that that happened to you through your perception. It created a feeling you, but I would say that nature does not create art. Nature creates beauty and peace, but it's the human vehicle through the power of expression, and that expression for oneself and an audience, that art is formed, that the creative action within within consciousness itself takes place. But I would say it's not art in nature. It becomes art. You take a picture of that, becomes art. But if you witness it, it's nature. Do you know what I mean? It's
oh, yeah.
But human,
absolutely.
It takes a human touch to make it into what we are calling art.
Absolutely right, because there's this choice that goes on, because we're these sentient beings that we can do this, and every moment is this choice that we're participating in. And when you bring up nature, which is fabulous, because I know I always have to live on the East Coast or the West Coast, because I have to be by the ocean. So, oh, well, you have to be by the ocean. Hey. This is a source, and it is nature incarnate in the ocean. And she's not thinking, oh, I think I'm going to blow a big wind today, and oh, I think I'm going to be beautiful today. No, we're interpreting, like you said, we're interpreting that nature simply is. And to be able to tap into her power and the purity of what that is, what a gift. What a gift.
Right.
So when we come back to that creative point, because the artist is after the artist is an interpreter of something, obviously, because it's coming through that particular condition. But the core of creativity is more akin to the purity of nature, actually, because there it's unfettered by anything else. it is in fact the ever constantly changing universe. No matter how fractalized and small you get the unit to be, one, you know, could, you know, the billionth of a second, it's still changing in that billionth. Therefore, everything is new, every single moment, and it's a creative force. That's the essence of what that is.
Yes, and a couple of things I would add to that. It's human intention that creates art. You know, it's like, it's not art necessarily if you're just maybe talking to someone on the street. It could be, but once you isolate that, once you put a frame around it, and that frame is really a vehicle for intention saying, look at this, that becomes a piece of art, of expression. Like looking at this, look at this little piece separate from the totality of reality, because the totality of reality is all that is, and that's everything. That's the nature. But as soon as humans step on the scene, and this is the magic of art, by putting a frame around a limited reality, you get the immensity of all that is. I think that's the magic, right?
That is certainly part of the magic, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because without the ability to make very, very good choices, it can either be pedestrian or it can be a piece of art. We've all seen stuff. Oh, that's, you know, the velvet painting. That's kitsch. And then we go see, the water lilies, and one goes, oh, my God, this is just so powerful and beautiful and extraordinary, I can weep. Wow, what's the difference between those two? Was the frame was put around both of them, because it then rests upon the choices that and your filter system to highlight the correct things that propel yourself. Of course, you're doing it. You know, propel yourself into further developing that particular piece of art, and then someone else who's observing it to be able to also do that. Sometimes you could, and it's very interesting to use you putting a frame around something. Because we lived through the period, and it's not quite over, but it is pretty much over, where, you know, galleries and, you know, even places in, you know, in New York and other things were presenting, and certainly choreographically there was a time period, extremely pedestrian movements and framing things that were absolutely, quote, normal, and calling it art. Because there was that part of the movement was moving away from this bigger thing into, no, the simple action is the art. Now, mind you, of course, the simple action is the art, because, you know, on some level, everything has that inside of it. It's just a question, like, when you hear that rap music and you go, this doesn't do anything for me.
I know. I just want to get back to what you just said, the pedestrian, because it brought up a really vivid image many, many years ago. It's really actually when I first met you. I forgot where we were. You had a couch, and you that guy Michael, and you were doing this like piece, and it was like you were doing a performance piece, but you were like hanging out. Do you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. This was at the New York Avant-Garde Festival. And, in fact, we were moved to the center because it was extraordinary. Absolutely.
Explain
extraordinary.
Explain what you were doing, because I haven't thought about it in a while, but it's still like, what? What's going on? So, yeah, talk about what that was.
Yeah, well, it's so that really was something. And, it really was. You know, when Charlotte Mormon came over to us at the first day and said, you guys, we have to move you to this other space. I mean, we looked at each other and went, this is totally appropriate. But okay, so at that time, there were certain things that were going on in the performance world. And, my partner at the time, Michael Simon, and myself were developing these works that kind of almost like German expressionistic works. They were very stylized and very sharp, but at the same time, and what you saw was a perfect example of this, is a living room was set up, and all that we did, and it was totally, I mean, anybody like yourself as well, you know, walk by and watch and say, oh my God, these guys are totally concentrated. This is, oh my God, what is this? We were not being pedestrian in the way of, oh, we're just going to jump around. No, we were taking a real setting of a living room, and all of our movements of going to sit down, writing on a tablet, typing something, pouring a glass of orange juice, acknowledging each other, sharing that space in that way, it was just as you remember it, because it took you out of, even though it was totally normal living room, it took you out of the living room experience that was nothing into a sharper focus of this internal life that goes on inside the most pedestrian of places, the car wash, the living room, you know. No, something else
right.
is happening, and that's
you
what we
put
were
a frame,
after that.
You put a frame and a context to it, and it became something else.
That's right. That's exactly right. It transcended what the normal perception of what that is. And just like, you know, doors of perception of, that's exactly right. Having
so what
that frame
were you hoping,
changes everything.
I mean, what were you consciously hoping, because you did do something happens for people who saw that, but what was your conscious intent, I mean, in a way, for doing a piece like that?
Well, what's so interesting, in doing a piece like that, the conscious intent, because it takes a tremendous amount of concentration over a long period of time, because we did it for, I don't know, 4 hours or 5 hours. We lived there, basically. And other people have done things, you know, having these living situations, you know, going on to the future, but we were pretty cutting edge, that it was really paying specific attention to every detail. I'll tell actors, no, really talk to them or really listen. You're not just doing it from a script. No, really listen to the words. And that's a skill, I want to tell you. That's really hard to do. And here, it was really heightened by the, we were more stylized in the movement because, you know, there was no jumping, there was no relaxing that way. But the intention for both of us was just what I said. Every single moment in that living room was hyper-concentrated attention. Nothing was left unlooked at and examined. And boy, oh boy, in our real lives, most people don't really do that in their lives. Oh, yeah, they look at that and, oh, yeah, nice hat. But if you ask someone, well, how many fibers were actually sticking off the side of that hat? They go, what are you talking about? Well, yeah, that doesn't really have any artistic value or anything like that. But it's an exercise where you do that, and that becomes the reality of that amount of focus. It's phenomenally compelling. And that's what you start with.
Becoming reality.
Wait,
becoming, I mean, that's the power of art in a way where you can fabricate anything from a science fiction movie to an abstract painting, and suddenly a reality is presented to the viewer, to the witness, that expands them in a way, opens up new levels of perception, because the artist has taken a chance and has explored the unknown. It goes back to the old saying of one of our teachers, we're here to make known the unknown, and the only person that does that is the artist.
I kind of believe that, because this is, as I say, I believe the artist is the beacon from the planet. Everyone is following that light. So I do believe that, and you and I both do believe that, to make known the unknown. Exactly right. And if we go a step back, even into, you know, the deeper consciousness, and say everything is known and simply needs to be remembered, because it all exists. Right here, right
I don't
now.
Know if I don't know if I agree with that, because I think on one level everything you know it all exists, and everything is unknown and becoming at the same time, you know? It's unfolding into the newness that never was. The universe is expanding each moment. Each moment, it is becoming something it has never been. So
that's exactly right.
I think both those things are true, and I don't think we're able to even understand how that's possible. But,
how can we possibly know the unfathomable? And I think the scientists and whatnot are trying to further define what makes things work. This is a thought, because we saw it in the brain. This synapse fired on those two neurons, and there was your thought. No, that was two neurons that were firing. But what was the essence of the thought? How do you define that feeling? I looked at her and I fell in love. Because these chemicals secreted in your body and... The chemicals you're right, okay. There's something else that's going on that's bigger than that. And, the physicists and whatnot are certainly trying to further define that. And, God bless them, because I suppose the more that we know about that, the better off we are, I guess.
Ever be able to define it, because...
No! How can we possibly do that? This is enormous. It's unfathomable. The unknown, and the known, and we're this very, 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 very tiny, piece of consciousness. Because we now really know how extraordinarily huge the series of universes and et cetera are. But in fact, this little microcosm of Alan and this little microcosm of Mark, and you go, whoa, you mean the personality? You mean Mark and Alan? The answer is no, not Mark and Alan, but really the essence of Mark and Alan that has no separation really from all that is. And the glory of being a sentient being is that we can reflect. Years ago, I developed this little process that I used with theater people, and it was called reflection direction, and that's what I called it. And that's what it was.
Reflection direction? What does that mean?
It's looking into, turning inward to get to that core point where there's no static. It's a central ever changing point, the singularity, and reflecting it out, and there's your expression. There's where it is. So without that sense of finding that center, that truth, that vibration, that light, that greater understanding there, limits what the reflection is, because you're not as illuminated. That piece of aluminum foil that's reflecting it out, or that reflective mylar, he still has a little bit of dirt on it. It still has, and the job of the artist, I feel both on a daily basis and certainly on a project basis when you finally really do something, is pulling away the onion skin. Keep on pulling away the things that we almost by nature translate into being easier and better able to understand. And no, we want to pull that away and be raw. We want to pull that away and reveal what's going on, not be reactive to what's going on. That's why it's reflection direction, not reaction direction. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I think that goes along with the idea of what makes really great art and why. I mean, everything's an expression, but you get Shakespeare and you get some guy on the street doing some... ridiculous theater, you get. And why is one thing, let's say, better if you want to give it a judgment, or more of a masterpiece? What makes one art better than another piece of art? That's what I'm interested in understanding.
Well, I think it's not just. Yeah, you know, we have to, again, take it from the two points of view. So, you know, from the outside point of view, the first thing, obviously, is how impactful it is and what you feel and all that. So when you feel something, you go, yeah, you hold on to things. You go, yeah, that was fine. And then we've also gone to things and went, oh, my God, I know one of my goals is I want people to dream about the show of mine that they just saw. That goes, that makes it bigger. It goes further. And I didn't want to lose this train of thought from the outside. Oh, yes. And also that some things have a very small theme and others have a huge moral to the story that you breathe in the enormity of it, and that makes great art. When it gets to be that big, that it overwhelms you in a way. And again, that's from the outside. But when we turn to the inside, oh, what makes great art? You can be, listen, I've written stuff and torn them up. I have stuff that I go, wow, okay, that was interesting, I guess, for that time. Doesn't really hold anymore. And then there's other pieces that I've written that, you know, going back and, you know, reviewing them or looking them up in the video or whatever, and I go, whoa, I sharpened some of this up now, but this is a really good work because it has those elements to it. It came from my heart. It came from that place deep inside and was unfettered by social mores, so to speak, and it was the expression of what it really was in terms that people could take in and respond to. You know, like, use the example, if he was born, you know, 100 years ago, nobody would have paid any attention to Jackson Pollock. They would have thought he was in that case, maybe even thrown him in an institution. And I'm sure there were artists, you know, 200 years ago that were in institutions because people thought they were anything. You know? They would just have their time. Exactly. You know, it was just unacceptable. That form of communication was unacceptable.
But I think art also reflects the times. I mean, you couldn't get rap music 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I mean, there's that reflection of the time. I mean, the real artists, the real masterpieces are also in touch with their times, but also, of course, transcend their time. So
yes,
it's that mystery, that power of... So the creative force, you're saying this in... sense, I mean, you're not just saying, a lot of people said this, in touch with the infinite as it works through us. Don't you think this is really the only reason we've incarnated to begin with?
I kind of think so. Again, you know, there's a part of me that doesn't, that can't really understand the enormity of that, of, you know, reincarnating to do this particular experience, whatever. But I can certainly understand what you're saying. And I'm not saying that I don't believe in reincarnation, I do believe in reincarnation, but who am I to say, you know, you come back and you're doing what you're doing, and it gets a little bit sloppy, actually. Because it seems to be unclear. Listen, one more way.
But I don't.
Have you ever been at the birth of a child, where this child comes out of a woman's body, takes its first breath, and opens its eyes? And if you are able to be calm enough, because sometimes it's crazy, but if you're able to be calm enough, and they look at you, because they do, and I don't care what these brain people say, oh, they don't really see anything. Yeah, because they're not looking with Earth eyes. They're looking at the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth sense eyes. And you look at them and you're open, you get them right away. And they look at you and they get you right away. And I mean that because you see both the infinite and you see the personality. They've come through. Oh, they're really looking me up and down. And sure enough, as they grow up, that's that little personality that they're functioning through that we all know. You want to eliminate that. You come in with that little thing, and that's your way of functioning through stuff, but you want to eliminate that in order to be able to get the purity of what's behind that. And when you see newborns, you get both of those hits, and it's extraordinary because it is really new life, and they've been there for 9 months or 8 months or whatever, and, you know, in the womb and stuff, they haven't come out and then taken the breath, and now the earth plane has become their school. Before that, it wasn't. Mm. They weren't doing that. And when you talk about this, you know, this reincarnation circle, let's say, and aren't we really coming into, you know, to get that, it manifests in very, very different ways. Because, as you know, I was run over about 10 years ago by a truck.
Right.
All the stuff I had done leading up to that point, and, you know, being an artist and working and a dancer, I could basically really never, you know, dance again after that. I was extremely, you know, bones out of my body. I was saved in the street and, you know, really had a major experience, obviously. I was dead for 20 seconds. After that moment, I mean, it took me 4 years of rehab to be able to really be functioning again, but after that moment, I viewed my own existence in a radically different way. And this goes back to this thing of creativity again. Because I never stood, you know, out there and said, oh, you know, look at me banging my chest, you know, I'm so creative. Not at all. I you know, worked really hard to try and find and open up parts of me. And clearly, there was more. And more in a big way. Because these events, you know, like Castaneda hitting you on the back, you are what I am, not you are, I was, propelled into another understanding, which goes back to actually your thing of, you know, reincarnation coming back to what you really meant to do, because there is something more, because everything is so huge and unfathomable, but I was given an opportunity to really re-examine what that core meant. I was given the gift of life again, and my heart was transformed. The way that I looked and spoke to people from that moment on was transformed. And here I am as a, you know, an intelligent guy, you know, doing my art and something, going, wow, well, I never knew that was really what was going on, really. And oh, I'm going to write stuff about this expansion, about this. It transforms everything. So this core of creativity and this core of understanding and this core of who we really are, not personality, but, you know, all that is person, is remarkable and transformative. That's the thing of creativity that really is the core. That's the battery. And I'm not saying so people go through horrible experiences, you know.
Well, but how were you different? I mean, so you, yeah, this awful, amazing thing happened, but what were you different like? How, I mean, you sort of said it, but could you say what had changed in that moment for you?
What changed was this delicate thing called life became not just a given and not something that I could sort of slough off or not consider. This thing of life, I understood, was so phenomenally precious and was so limited in our bodies that it changed me fundamentally in how I looked at everything and how I responded to everything, because that delicateness and that fragility and that beauty, and God, I just wanted to see my children, and I was able to, they were, and that's the greatest play, that's the greatest creation of ever, is creating life. Oh, Alan, I mean, I have tears in my eyes just talking to you. It was so overwhelmingly powerful. And listen, I'm an intense guy. I mean, anybody who knows me even now, I'm an intense guy. And so I'm not mellow, even though I had this experience. I didn't suddenly become, you know, some, oh, airy-fairy, you know, hippy-dippy guy. No, I'm an intense guy. I was a hippie, and I'm still intense. But I'm intense in a very different way. Like I say, the transformation in my heart it just opened up. It just opened up. I was more embracive. I was definitely less judgmental. I mean, here I was, and that was a really huge thing too. When I would be in the wheelchair, and people would look down at me, and they would mm-hmm. sneer at me. They would freaking sneer at me, like, "Oh, you should be walking." Mm-hmm. No, I can't walk. I'm not able to do that. I'm so happy for you that you can do that. That was the transition for me. Not that this person, what a schmuck, saying, you know, or looking at me that way. And I'm telling you, this was really not funny for me. But it turned me around. That was just a great example. For, you know,
but how did it change your art? I mean, did it change your art? Did it change the way you look at your own creative thing and what you then were putting out in the world as an expression?
I think that it did modify it, but remember the program I had gone through my life of doing art and being an artist was fundamentally involved in in revealing the inner part of myself through this, you know, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual way. And it did change it because that big opening, that bunk onto the back, but for me, being shattered, having bones shattered, you know, and having replacement parts and stuff, that moment opened up an even deeper place. Because again, this thing of what life is, I still can't understand it thoroughly, but obviously, but what this thing of life is most assuredly then came into the further expressions. Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah. Even working with actors and making our communal pie became making a pie of joy, you know? It didn't become a pie of, you know, nose to the grindstone. It was a subtle but enormous change. Yes, absolutely.
No, thank you for sharing that. What's that?
No, I was going to say, I obviously, you know, sort of maybe the deeper meaning of the art changed because I had a deeper understanding. And isn't that what it's about anyway? The further, deeper, more profound understanding one can have, then the greater the depth and power of the reflection. That's where it's coming from. And so, yeah, it most assuredly had a profound influence, yeah.
So I'm just thinking, no, but thank you for sharing that. And I know it's deep and to the core, that experience. And yeah, we were all, you know, praying for you and just hoping.
Thank you.
You know, and you seem to be fine now. You know, you've come through that.
I certainly made it to the other side of that, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't see this white light business, but I was dead for 20 seconds and they had to get me in the cut me out of the car and intubate me and get me alive again. But yeah,
right.
It does have a profound influence on one being. I've been pretty lucky, I will tell you that. People say, "Oh my God, you know, you can't use your arm as much. You can't really do that. You can't lift and can't walk very well." And yeah, right. I can't dance now. I can't do these heavy physical things. But in the process of recovery, something else happened, which was what we're talking about. I didn't just say, "Oh, poor me." It was kind of like, "Whoa, okay, this is the new Mark. Okay, I'm a creative guy. Who's this guy?" You know?
that is sort of where I'm interested in going. Are our personalities and our lives, could that be considered art in a sense? You know? That we're manifesting this unconscious vision of our existence. Is that the art?
Well, that is what we're doing. I don't think that the personality, you know, is the highest expression of that, because we use our personality in order to be safe, to get what we need, to find a partner perhaps, and even procreate. But beyond the personality is something altogether different. And I think what we talked about earlier about, you know, on the religious spiritual side, where, you know, let's say you go to an ashram and you're toning and you're meditating and you're doing this, and it could be individual or group setting, that there isn't that other thing of a product at the end. It's simply a pulling apart of the illusion and not attaching to thought and not having judgments in order to have that deeper part of oneself be awake, basically awake. The artist isn't happy with being awake. We need to see something too.
Well, but it's not the artist. It's the energy, like you said, that comes through the artist that is what's being said, right? The artist takes credit for it, but, you know, someone has to take credit for it. But it's the real art is beyond the artist in that sense, right?
I most assuredly do believe that, yes. Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, you're on the Oregon coast, you do production. I know this, but for people listening, you direct shows out there at the Newport Arts Center in Newport, Oregon. And if anyone's out there, they should definitely go to the Newport Arts Center. And you're really excited about this play that you're going to be doing in the spring, right? You want to talk about that a little bit?
I've got a couple of minutes here, and you know what's come up for me, and I'm developing this piece now, that, as you indicated earlier on, you heard this rap music, and, you know, what the heck is that? That the world has certainly changed, and there's this super technological portion of it as well, and it enables someone like me, who's a visual artist and a movement artist, to be able to bring those elements in. And it's not just bringing them in haphazardly, but given where I am in my life with my age and things that have happened and reflection, and I'm not writing a memoir, but the piece that I'm writing really does have to do with being present now and these influences that have happened along the way. And they're able to be represented, you know, portions of the subconscious, you know, with uses of technology and music and projections and things like that, where they can further define that vibration and that space where it's not flat anymore. It's not as linear as basically we really were forced into, you know, let's say in the 70s. I mean, I remember doing video editing on a reel, on a machine, having to get it just right. And now with HD, I mean, everything with time-based correction, it's all there. You can do editing in a night and put something out on YouTube next morning. So that kind of reflection, and what I'm trying to represent for sure, how this emotional tone of our life and the present, how it's not really done. Those past impressions have life even in the moment, and
yes,
they're propelling this character on into that it's not done. You know, it isn't over, even though, you know, he talks to the, you know, basically, you know, representationally to the audience, and my life as a clown is over. I've seen so much, but I can't even do it anymore, kind of thing. Where it's, he discovers that it isn't over, and there is more, and there is more humor, and it's different, and it's wonderful. So I'll see how it fleshes out. You know, writing stuff changes, and suddenly, this is a science fiction piece. You didn't tell me you were doing that. I go, yeah, I know. I talked to you about it on the radio, but it didn't quite work out that way. It turned into something else. Because
but what's the other piece
of creativity? Something else happens. You go, oh my God, that's so much better. You know,
that's right.
Really what I'm expressing. You know, but I'm pretty excited about.
Well, that does sound exciting, but you're also doing a piece called Venus in Fur.
Yes, this is on Broadway, a totally hilarious sexual comedy, erotic adventure of these two people, this woman who's coming in for an audition to this writer-director, and he's based his play on the Sack of Moksha, Venus in Furs, which was the initiation of sadomasochism, basically, in the in the late 19th century. And it turns out
It was initiation of what, did you say? The initiation of
basically sadomasochism.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, he writes this erotic novel that has to do very much so with submission and pain and pleasure. And Marquis de Sade, we used it as his manifesto, you know? And so it's the Sade part, you know, Marquis de Sade with the sadism, but also Sacco Moshe was the sadomasochism, but he was sort of the masochist. He was the masoch side. He came to the word masochism. The play is not masochistic in that sense, but it's this actress who's auditioning and for this playwright, and they're going over the sides of this thing, and it keeps unraveling where, oh, who's really in control here? Oh, who's directing who? Oh, he says he knows women, but she's something he doesn't understand, and kind of ba-boom. It's, first of all, it's a great physical comedy piece. There's so many funny parts in it, but because she's a ditzy broad actress, but she's not. She's freaking Aphrodite, you know? She's freaking Aphrodite and putting the guy in his place. It's delicious. It's huge. It's just absolutely fabulous. It has, the impact of it is so big. It's great. It's great. It totally empowers, you know, women, and it's fantastic, you know?
Oh. Uh-huh, that sounds exciting. When is that going up on the Oregon Post?
We're opening up October 13th and then closing October the 29th. So it runs
That's coming up. That's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Just at the end of the summer, we were kicking into into the rehearsals and doing it. So.
Oh, one more thing I wanted to ask you about was this show Art that you did on the Oregon Coast. What was that about, and how did that, were you able to extract your part in that show?
It's very funny, the piece. Art is about three men and one painting. And the painting that this guy buys is a white canvas. It's white and painted white. And one of these guys is a real, art, aficionado. And one guy, he kind of collects a little bit, and he's out there. And then one guy is a total, their third friend who's on the outskirts, he's just a guy, you know?
Yeah.
And they all revolve around this piece of art. And their friendship becomes totally unraveled because of their opinions about this piece and what it means that the other person both likes it or bought it or how they're going to frame it. And it's a fantastic way, symbolically, of expressing our feelings in our intimate relationships. And it has to do with these three friends and how they get through this to come back to being friends. And that this piece of art was something that was outside of them. So it did not have to do with the creativity and the producing of art, but rather this symbolic thing of three people and one painting and how it is the center of this very funny and very aggressive interplay of friendship. So
now when you're directing somebody else's piece, are you trying to tune into what the writer has intended, or do you say, I'm going to take this and my own spin and meaning onto these words and actions? How do you approach that?
Yeah, that is a very good question. Years ago, I had directed A Midsummer Night's Dream, and it was a fabulous show, and it was punks
it
and yuppies.
Actually, really, I saw it. Really loved it.
That's
it was
right.
Great.
That's
yeah.
right. You actually yeah. saw that piece, and it was with punks and yuppies, and it was the Athens Cafe, and it was like country western music, and it was just fantastic, and audiences really related to it, and they understood. They really understood this dynamic of the love and the fairy dust, and it was really, really pretty amazing in that way. Mm. And that's a way of interpreting a work that already exists. And Shakespeare is fabulous for that because the writing and the development of the story is just so grounded and so wonderful that you can really modernize it and take different twists and turns.
Right.
Other times. And most times, actually, I read a lot of plays, and I'll read a play and go, "Wow, I can really see this like this."
Mm-hmm.
Now, I traditionally don't go to see the plays because I see them in my mind. So I'm using what I'm seeing in my mind, and so I'll design a set. Someone else will execute it. And I'll have the way I like it to be lit. I'll have the characters take a particular way of doing it, because there are themes that, as a director, you want to embody the themes that the author wrote, because they took time in order to make this some sort of moral to the story, let's say. So I can't go around that, and I don't intend to go around that, because I'm moved by that. But in terms of working with the actors and the staging of it, the physicality of it, the set design of it, that's coming out of my brain. And the writer may come and see it and go, "Wow, I never saw it done that way before." But it's like Bob Dylan. Jimi Hendrix goes all along the Watchtower, and Bob Dylan turns around, and the next time he's in a concert out there, he does the Jimi Hendrix version of along the Watchtower.
Right.
That is a tremendous homage, I will tell you, because he wrote it, he recorded it, it was fabulous. Another artist took it, interpreted it, recorded it, and then the original artist went, "Yo, that's better than what I did. I'm doing your version of my song."
Mm.
So everyone moves it through and transitions it in that way, and I surely do, because I see things in my head.
Right.
I see things.
So I think that's a good point, because we're here, to take what's come before and modernize and make it contemporary, make it relatable within the modern sensibility. And of course, like Shakespeare, there's some human situations that are eternal, but it's the circumstances beyond that seem to shift. But
yeah.
So it's both in a way, and maybe there's an evolution to human circumstances as well.
Oh, I would certainly think so. You look at science fiction, the entire arena of science fiction, not fantasy fiction, but science fiction. And some of the writers who are absolutely brilliant, and some of the movies get made and whatnot, that's exactly the area you're talking about. One of the bases of science fiction is you take the culture and you take it out there, the Foundation trilogy. Oh, my God, Dune. These are enormous ways of stretching the human condition into different circumstances. And and some of them are pretty bleak, and some of them are totally uplifting. And at some point, I do believe that we will not need the body anymore, and will be one of the science fiction stories that were written, but of course there won't be books at that time. And it takes place 4,000 years from now. Or not. We could, totally make the planet a planet of ashes and have it come back again,
But will we have art without the body? Will we have art without the form? I mean, can it exist? And maybe there's a higher level to it where there's some, non-physical beings that are merging light forms together and say, "This is my art," So I don't know. I'm just asking.
That's kind of true. I kind of think in a way that this thing of art is pretty much, this human condition thing, because we have a need to express, because we don't understand in words for sure, but we don't understand the all in all and the magnificence and the enormity of everything. And so we try through, whether it's visioning or, my imagination or being inspired or having a feeling that vibrates my whole body that I know is coming from a bigger place, and trying to express it. But I think that if we do, in fact, you know, childhood then, we progress into the greater consciousness, then there is no need for the art. I mean, even people who are channels, you know, will say that the great thing about being human and being that is that you are able to feel these emotions. You're able to do that kind of expression. Because when you're out and disembodied, we don't feel emotions. We don't feel those things because there's no such thing as feelings, you know? It's like in space.
Right.
You have these battles and there's all this noise. No, that's just so we can understand these battles. There is no noise in outer space. A sound will travel, and when it hits something, obviously we can pick it up. But there's no noise, per se, out there of this thing going on. But it is interesting that people have recorded the sounds of the spheres out there. And there are sounds out there. But who knows what the origination is, but it's very different in that sense when you're disembodied. It's not the same thing. So
I mean, I think, though, with this proliferation of computers, the internet, the more increased leisure time, perhaps, I think everyone has a chance to be a creative being in some ways, and I think that will hopefully evolve humanity. I think we can come into a beautiful time if everyone allows this level of creation through them, and then there wouldn't be anything to fight about or argue or judge about. I mean, this could be a real renaissance, but we're right at the edge of that not happening or happening. Do you see that?
This is definitely true, because even the people that go around with their iPods and are taking these almost like a travelogue, and they're taping it to their hats with the GoPros, and this is my jump out of the airplane. Well, that's not art, but it is communication. And like you said,
that's not art. Why is that not art?
It's simply a representation. And I don't want to sound like a schmo, but because it's simply this action of jumping out of this airplane and doing this parachute and landing on the ground, and that's.
I mean, I agree. I agree with you. It's not thought out. It's not nuanced. It's not. But of course, it's what Truman Capote said about Jack Kerouac. That's not writing. That's typing. You know. So.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't necessarily feel exactly the same way as he does about Kerouac, but. This is what's true. But the thing is these two things. The communication is now more available. More people are stepping into this thing of communication, although they're also becoming more isolated, but they're stepping into it, and they're becoming a reporter. They're reporting on things, more reporting, more sharing of these things. But that's not to be confused with art. That thing is about jumping out of the parachute, and let's say having him wave back, and you know the parachute goes back and forth, and you see the clouds going by, and then you see the earth, and the earth is getting closer. For me, if I was sent that as a message, I might in fact take that and go, because only if I was moved by it, going, wow, I have a fundamental conviction about the freeness of spirit and the flight of man. And here I'm getting this parachute image. Oh my God! I'm gonna do this piece. Oh yeah! Oh, it's gonna be all based around a parachute. Oh my God! I can see it now. They're going up, and the air. I can even put blowers on the stage. People trying to fly with Icarus wings and make it kind of crazy mythological. Wow, that becomes art. The thing about jumping out of the plane with a GoPro is a documentation. But I've taken that and been inspired, been imaginatively triggered, had my heart touched with the flight of man, and then I even bring up, oh my God, I just got changed into the mythology and the Icarus, and everyone, this can become a piece. Someone may say, yeah, do the piece, and then that's so banal. I go, I know, I didn't make it right. God, I shouldn't have done that. Yeah, that's art.
Okay, so right. I'm getting it now. So what I think you're calling art and the creative process is like it's not reporting.
No.
It's like you're taking these ideas and you are weaving them together with intention and inspiration in order to create a bigger picture so people can get a deeper message. If it's just reporting, it's like, you know, just looking out your window. That's art. It's like then by interpreting it and manipulating in a good way the objects of intention, you create greater insights into, or you attempt to, we attempt to, by maneuvering the elements to show that there's more to reality than just looking out the window, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I get it now.
Exactly right.
I get what you're saying. I mean, I always felt it, but I think you helped me put that into words or into an understanding. Well, why isn't reporting art? Because of this very act of weaving the elements of creation to make something bigger. And when you could do it on many, many levels, and every time someone looks at a painting, for instance, that's really a masterpiece, that's fresh. That's not, oh, you look at Mona Lisa, like maybe you've seen it a million times, but when you look at it, that is a fresh painting, you know? That's a masterpiece.
Yes, yes. There's something that's captured there. You know, the kind of the essence of spirit is infused in that, and it's undeniable. And it really is actually undeniable. That's why, you know, it hurts my very heart and spirit and soul when these amazing statues are being blown up by these people who are in such denial of the greatness of all that is. And it's just so sad. It's because those are gone forever now. And it's just a terrible thing. But
well, it's
I'm
a crime against humanity, because this is our human heritage, the collection. And that's the problem with fundamentalism in all religions. They don't see the symbolic, the multiple levels of meaning that the artist intends. You know, a real artist is looking at the non-fundamental levels of existence. It's looking at the multiple levels of being, and that's another level to the distinction of art, that there's, like you said in the very beginning, like there's more than one way to interpret it. But if you're a fundamentalist, nope, that's the way it is. That's what the book said. That's how it is, and that's all it'll be. And so those people are robbing our capacity as human beings to see many, many levels at once. They're robbing their own capacities because they are locked into this particular way. And it exists in all religions, you know, that's the thing. And that's why I'm sort of anti-religious in that way, because that's what religion wants you to do, look at the world just this way, on just this level. And the real human being sees many, many levels.
You're absolutely right. As I said to Oswald, I passed through that, you know, as this phase of understanding, and went, oh, okay, now I can move on to the next thing, because it's extremely limiting, which is the antithesis of what you would think spirit would be, because it's not spirit, it's religion. It's like politicians, you know?
Right.
They're limited by definition. They're limited. So it's, you know, it's really quite unfortunate. But it seems, even when you're talking about the technology and that and the expansiveness, that while we live on the earth, so we're getting the polarity further and further, stretched further and further. You know, fundamentalists on one side and expansionists on the other side. And They said, yeah, you know, it looks inevitable. Childhood Zen is going to be here, where the fundamentalists will, you know, stay here in the muck and mire, and the expansionists will zoom into realms yet unknown.
So, right. So the very function of art is to challenge fundamentalist views and say, look at this painting, look at this play, look at this dance, and realize more is possible. It plants seeds of possibility into the viewer and it changes them.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's scary to a lot of people, obviously. And the art has to keep lighting the way, no matter what.
Yeah.
I said that earlier, no matter what anybody feels about it. It's like, no, I'm doing this. This is what's going on.
Right.
And you keep lighting, you keep illuminating, you keep illuminating. And that's and you illuminate through, you know, expression. And certainly from my perspective, I do have an intellect, no doubt, but from my perspective, it comes, you know, fundamentally from the heart. It comes from the emotional, the feeling body. And because that's how I express. You know, others who are taking it from the mental body are predominantly, let's say, you know, writers, let's say. So it's very interesting, but they're all of these are great. I try to be as amazing as I can possibly be by continuing to self-examine. Because there is no outside, and so, you know, there is no outside. There really is only the inside, because in the self-examination, one realizes and has these moments. The great masters have really long moments of these that were really not separate at all. Really not separate. So, and we're all part of the continuing creativity of all that is. So, and they're not just words.
No, not at all.
Really not.
There's a great quote by Terence McKenna. Do you know? I mean, he said some beautiful things about art. But let me find this one that kind of talks directly to what you just said, and let me see if I can find this, because he basically says it's up to the artist to find new avenues of thought, and anything else, he says, is a dithering while Rome burns, and if the artist can't find the way cannot be found. That's Terence McKenna, you know. So
very good. He's gone now, but Terence McKenna, so brilliant, amazing. And that's a great example, because his perspective, he literally thought outside the box. And so his perception and then his revelations, and then thank goodness he was a person who shared, were unbelievably different. Like, whoa, I never looked at stuff that way. And your life has changed after that. And that's what the artist also is attempting to do, to open up those areas where, wow, I never looked at life that way, or I never felt life that way. You know, I never experienced. It could even be grief. You know, it could be about, you know, someone's loss in a war. Oh, my goodness, I've never really experienced grief that way. And for me, you know, in a real life situation, you know, having this, you know, this collision and whatnot, I never experienced that delicate, fragile thing that was called life.
Right. So the artist increases the human experience too, right? I mean, it increases our capacity to feel.
Yes, absolutely. And so,
This is the quote. I'll read it to you. He says, "Art's task is to save the soul of mankind, and anything less is a dithering while Rome burns, because it's the artists who are self-selected and who are able to journey into the other. If the artist cannot find the way cannot be found." So
beautiful.
That's
beautiful.
That's our mission. That's your mission. That's your lifelong mission, is to...
Yes, it really has developed that way. Most assuredly. I mean, I was going to be a doctor and help people, and then I was always a dancer as a young person, and then got a little bit more. Then went to college and went, no, medicine will help people, but this other thing is going to do something else that's going to help humanity. This is something I really need to do. So it's fascinating.
This was your way. This is your way. I mean, this is, you know, this was the most fun for you. This is what's most fun for you. This particular expression.
That's right.
I mean,
and listen, I tell my kids as well as others, do what you love, baby. You know, do what you love. We're here, we're gone. And when you do what you love, you discover more love and you discover more greatness of both of self and of things around you. And it elevates. When you're around people that are smiling, when you're people, even when you see a couple that they really love each other. The example I used earlier of these kids, you know, who have no rational thing going on at all, and they're dancing and jumping up and down in the sprinkler or the sun came out. What a glorious moment. What a beautiful moment. You know.
Could we live in a world where everyone was artists, you feel?
I don't think the word artist would be used, but I think we could potentially live in a world, though I don't know if it's really how humans are wired, but potentially live in a world where the ability and the right and the freedom to express was embraced, that everybody actually would do that. But I also, you know, feel that unless you're at this, you know, totally harmonized place, that, you know, people hold on, people, you know, bang into others, people get jealous, people feel their way is the right way. Well, that is not harmonious in the classical, you know, harmony sense, and what you described is this, you know, Shangri-La, so to speak. Is Shangri-La possible? Perhaps.
I think it is, and I do think it's possible that we can live in a world where everyone's an artist, because just think, everyone has that amazing potential in them to let, like you said in the beginning of the show, that infinite intelligence flow through them, and I think that's why we've come here. You know, the forces of the culture doesn't allow that at this point, but just imagine if it did.
Yes, yes,
that
absolutely. I'm with you. It's getting a little late for me here, my friend.
Okay. Well, thank you for everything. I've always appreciated your insights and just your creativity in expressing your creativity.
Yeah. Hey, it's that left brain, right brain thing. I'm really lucky.
All right. So, do you have a website? I mean, or if people listening to this say, "Wow, I really want to follow up and talk to this guy," or whatever.
No, I'm pretty quiet. I'm okay. I'm not a big Facebooky person. I go out and I explore, but I'm very quiet. That's why I live in the woods in Oregon, and I watch the deer go by, and have my half wolf dog. And I'm really happy here, and I make my forays out to the art center, and that's my.
All right. Well, people can find your next production on the Oregon coast. So
that's exactly right, at the Newport Performing Arts Center.
All right. Well, thank you.
It's great being on your show. I always love visiting you in person. And, hey, we've collaborated and done real stuff. So, you know, our art is amazingly great. We did that great quintessence that is not done yet. It's going to be done more.
Exactly. And also, maybe we'll play this show on your local station in Newport. What's the station there?
Exactly right. KYAQ. FM 97.1 in Newport, Oregon.
Okay,
that's right. And I, for those of you out there, and if you pass by through Oregon, I have the New Realities show here as a regular show on the radio here. So people who are interested in the changing paradigm can tune in to Alan, who I love and respect, and I'm proud to be holding the flag out here. You know, out in Oregon. for you, my friend.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for every. Okay, let's stay in touch. We'll talk. We'll talk this week sometime. Okay.
That sounds great, Alan. Love you, buddy.
All right. Okay. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
I'll just sign off and say I've been talking to Mark Maislin. He's been a good friend of mine for years, decades, and he's an incredible director, writer, producer out on the Oregon coast, and you know, we'll might be collaborating in the future on some productions. But definitely go out to the Newport Arts Center to see what is happening out there in the next coming months, years, and you'll be surprised by the amazing talent that's out there. All right. Thanks for listening tonight. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. Go to my YouTube, subscribe to YouTube, my YouTube channel, youtube.com/newrealities. And thanks for listening. Good night.